gonna try. I'm gonna fake it. Is what I'm gonna do.
That's okay.
We've never done that.
That's right.
We'd ask everybody to please take their seats. We're getting ready to get started. Good morning, everybody. I'd like to call the Saturday, April 13th, 2019 meeting of the Arizona Game and Fish Commission to order. Good morning.
Fine to turn it on.
Not sparks.
This time.
I'd like to ask everybody if you would please join me in standing for the Pledge of Allegiance. The pledge is going to be led by Officer Richard Myers. He's one of our wildlife managers from Region 4 in Yuma.
States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Please be seated. Well, at this time of our meeting, we like to welcome our distinguished guests. We're glad to see several of our employees from out in the field that we don't typically see very often. So we'd like to welcome them, and especially their families that are here to help us recognize them for their service pins. We're going to start off with introductions from the commission, and then we're going to go right into our awards and recognition. Commissioner Brake.
Hi, I'm Bill Brake from Elgin, Arizona.
Good morning. Eric Sparks from Tucson.
Good morning. I'm Jim Zeiler from St. John's.
Good morning, Kurt Davis from Phoenix.
Mr. Director.
Ty Gray, Director.
Tom Finley, Deputy Director. Good morning.
Jim Odenkirk, General Counsel.
Josh Avey, Acting Assistant Director for Wildlife Management Division.
Joshua Hurst, Field Operations Coordinator, Acting for Assistant Director, Field Operations, Craig McMullen.
Jen Stewart, Acting Support Services AD for Doug Cummings.
I'm Tony Giles. I'm the Assistant Director for Information, Education, Recreation Division.
All right, Mr. Director.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So welcome everyone, and good morning. This morning we have 7 service pins to give out. These are for employees who have 20, 25, and 30-year service with the department. So as I call your name, come down here, and if you have family with you, bring them with, and then I'll read your script, and then we'll take a picture, and you can. The commission would also like to congratulate you. So we're going to start off with a 20-year service pin award for Ty Pebworth. Ty's, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Ty's joined by his wife, Vienna. Did I get that right? Cool first name, by the way. Ty's a native Arizona and grew up in Kearney. He worked in the mines in order to put himself through school at the University of Arizona. He graduated in 1996 with a degree in natural resources. Ty started with the department doing willow flycatcher surveys in 1997. When the field work came to an end, he came to Page Springs Hatchery to assist during a period when the hatchery was shorthanded. Ty was then hired as the fish culturist 1 at Page Springs in 1998. In 2005, he was promoted to the fish culturist 2, and in 2006, he was promoted to the manager one position. Ty's taken on several new responsibilities in the last few years. He's become a trainer in both forklift operations and four-wheel drive trailer operations. In regards to forklift training, he has provided invaluable hatchery operations, as new employees can be trained on site and permanent employees can renew their certification without having to travel to Phoenix. Ty has an excellent memory and is one of the old-timers at the hatchery. He assists with training new employees and recalling what was done and when. Ty's dedication to the department's mission is evidenced by his hard work and customer service. Even before there was a Sportsman's Expo or the department's Outdoor Expo, Ty volunteered to work at the Women's Expo in Phoenix, working to educate the public on the department and its hatcheries. Ty isn't working. He enjoys hunting and fishing with his kids and fellow employees. He's an avid NASCAR fan and loves watching sports. He even keeps up with how the local high school teams are doing in comparison to the rest of the states and says, "Go Wildcats." I'm not sure who that is, though. Anyway, Ty, congratulations, and thank you for 20 years of dedicated service.
Oh. And did you get the picture, Ty? Hey, congratulations. Thanks for all your work.
Tucson.
Our next 20-year service pin recipient is Richard Myers. Uh, Richard started with the department in 1998 within the Region 4 Fisheries Branch as a wildlife technician. He transitioned to a wildlife manager in 2000 in the 471 Quartzsite District, then the 472 Yuma District shortly thereafter. His interest in law enforcement led him to become the Region 4 Regional Investigator for 5 years. Richard missed the WM job and transitioned back to the 472 District where he currently resides. Richard is a general instructor, a field training officer, and a defensive tactics instructor. He has investigated multiple complex poaching cases, including several bighorn sheep and mule deer cases, as well as complex licensed fraud cases. Richard is often sought out for law enforcement advice from fellow officers. His work on improving the available water for big game species such as deer and bighorn can be noted by his multiple water projects in his district. Richard's work as the Region 4 Lead Volunteer Program Manager has led to an efficient team of dedicated volunteers. He's a third-generation human and a proud father of two daughters, Emma and Mallory. He's happily married to Carrie, his high school sweetheart of 14 years. Richard, congratulations and thank you for 20 years of service. Our next service pin recipient certainly wins the award for most miles traveled to get here this morning, I'm sure. Luke Thompson. Luke Thompson currently serves as the wildlife manager field supervisor on the Arizona Strip north of the Colorado River. Luke began his career with the department as an intern out of our Mesa office, served on the black-footed ferret recovery effort for nearly 3 years, began his wildlife manager career in the Yuma District, and moved to the Arizona Strip in 2002. Luke considers himself a staunch supporter of the North American model of wildlife conservation and is steadfast in his dedication to Arizonans and the resources held in the public trust. His wife Jenny and their kids Payson and Rihanna round out his life as a husband and father on the Arizona Strip. The lifelong hunter, Luke has always known the outdoors as a way of life. He wouldn't trade a minute of the journey and is embracing the current opportunity to bring two young hunters into our outdoor heritage. Luke, thank you for 20 years of dedicated service, and thanks for making the trip all the way. Our next 20-year pin recipient is Roger Thompson, and joining Roger is going to be his wife Caroline, son Hunter, and daughters Emma and Savannah. So this first part is very important. Roger is a proud native son of Nebraska. Okay? That's right. He moved to Arizona in 1986 and started working for the department in 1999. First as a construction technician with the Development Branch, then promoting to the site wildlife area in 2001, and finally over to Pine Top in 2010, where he serves today as the regional assistant. Roger, in his background in construction, farming, and ranching, is a self-proclaimed jack of all trades and master of some. I love that part. And he takes pride in getting things done, especially completing projects that have benefited our fish and wildlife resources. During his site tenure, he took great pride in improving the properties by building new trails, restoring grassland and riparian areas, and improving the facilities. In Pine Top, Roger continued his impressive run of accomplishments, including hauling hundreds of thousands of gallons of water and repairing critical wildlife catchments, completing a 3-year project to restore the hatchery ponds and create a new wetland at the regional office, and most recently working tirelessly to lead construction crews in the reconstruction of two critically important Apache trout barriers in the region. Roger, congratulations and thank you for 20 years of service. Thank you, Roger. Our last 20-year recipient, is Lori West. Lori is being joined by her husband, Clint, who I understand is an Iowa Hawkeye fan. I have to tell you a quick story. The only reason I know this is Nebraska and Iowa were playing earlier this year on a Friday after Thanksgiving during the day. I was recording the game, and I walked back to the office, and Lori goes, "I'm so sorry about the game." Like, oh. It was awesome. So today I'm really honored to recognize Lori for 20 years of service with the Arizona Game and Fish Department. She began her administrative career in the director's office in 1999. In 2006, Lori was promoted to Administrative Assistant 1 and joined the education branch, where she was then reclassified to an Administrative Assistant 2 in 2014. She has received accommodation for excellence and multiple certificates of achievement for all of her efforts in the INE division. Lori exemplifies the agency core values for her willingness to go the extra mile in her daily duties. She displays daily a positive attitude and genuine and caring nature. She did really feel bad when she told me Nebraska got beat. Her constant dedication to the department, dependability, and genuine concern for the public, customers, and colleagues is truly deserving of recognition. Lori, thank you for 20 years of service. We really appreciate you. So we have one 25-year pin this year. That's Dan Grubner. So Dan is joined by his wife, Ann, who's the owner and publisher of Get Your Mountain on Arizona and Pine Top, and their son, Danny, an engineer for a local construction firm. Prior to Dan moving to Arizona in 1994, he was teaching biology and natural resource classes in Ely, Minnesota. Is that right? Ely or Ely? Ely. Dan has researched wolves in northern Minnesota and Wisconsin and was the International Wolf Center's first educational coordinator. Dan moved to Phoenix to work for the non-game branch, primarily writing documents and conducting public meetings for the Mexican Wolf Reintroduction Program. In 1996, Dan moved to Pine Top as the non-game specialist and wolf project leader. Dan expanded his project efforts into bats, eagles, songbirds, prairie dogs, leopard frogs, mollusks, and other species. Dan successfully bred threatened Chiricahua leopard frogs in the Pine Top hatchery for recovery purposes and was instrumental in constructing a wetland at the Pine Top office where narrowhead garter snakes were placed to create a captive breeding population. Dan has also collaborated with several partners in developing a cost-effective electronic wildlife water catchment sensor, which can send real-time water level information to wildlife managers, reducing physical inspections, saving money, and assuring constant water supply for our wildlife. Dan, congratulations, and thank you for 25 years of service. So today's last service pin recipient is... This one's special for a variety of reasons, and I hope I get everybody right here, but Sue Wood is getting her 30-year pin. So I'm going to try, Sue, but you tell me if I miss anybody here. But coming up with Sue is her husband, Kelly, daughters, Crystal, and husband, Ron, Julie and husband, Thomas, grandchildren, Hannah and Amelia, and her mother, Betty, and her brother, Rick. Did I get it all right?
Okay. His grandson Joey is here.
Okay.
I missed him, and Julie and Thomas are not here.
Okay, so Grant.
And Jeff is here.
There you have it. So Sue started her career with the department in March of 1989 in the Region 3 office as a customer service rep. Just over a year later, she transferred to Region 1. In 1994, she was promoted to the Pine Top office manager, where she has served with distinction ever since. Sue understands that she and her team of CSRs are the face of the department to our constituents in the White Mountains, and she has dedicated her career to meeting our mission and providing excellent customer service. After 30 years, you can bet she has seen her share of change, strange days and excitement, from nuisance wildlife calls to landscape-scale wildfires and community evacuations, from two complete regional office remodels to various frozen water pipe catastrophes first thing in the morning. I heard about some of those. And the challenge we have met to make our customer service models function in the modern-day world of online services. Sue is the consummate team player who prides herself in meeting the issues head-on and working to improve what we We do through collaborative efforts, including regional emergency evacuations, planning, license simplification, marketing opportunities at regional offices, and problem-solving efforts to streamline purchasing procedures for regional personnel. So after 30 years of service, Sue recently retired from the department. So her and Kelly are looking forward to traveling, quilting, and enjoying their grandchildren. Sue, thank you much for so much for 30 years of service, and we wish you nothing but the best in your retirement. Again, thank you all for coming. I'd like to give one more round of applause to all our service pin recipients. Thank you for what you do. And Mr. Chairman, I think we'll take maybe a quick 5-minute break.
5 to 10 minutes, okay. Perfect. All right, Mr. Director, if we can get started again. We are on, you want to introduce the agenda?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. We'll be operating off an agenda revision 1, dated April 10th, 2019, for the benefit of the public. Agenda is available and located at the table by the door. Remember, the public wishes to speak to the Commission on an agenda item. Please fill out a blue slip, also available on the table. Get that to us up here, and we'll ensure you're recognized for the item you want to talk about. If you'd like to present the Commission with materials as part of your presentation, please place the materials in the box on the table by the door, and we'll make sure they are distributed. If you want to address the Commission on something that is not on the agenda, we have a call to the public notice for that purpose. You can sign up for the call to the public, and the chair will recognize you, and at that time, you can make your presentation. In accordance with open meeting law, the Commission is not able to discuss or take any action on the topic brought up on the call to the public because it was not noticed on the public agenda, but the Commission may refer it to a future meeting or ask the Department to meet with you to address your issue. I would like to announce that we are webcasting this meeting. However, the webcasting is not interactive. For today's meeting, members of the public must be present to submit a blue card to speak to the Commission on an agenda item. With that, Mr. Chairman, we'll go to item number one, which is the call to the public.
Thank you, Mr. Director. We have... I do have a few blue speaker cards, but they're for specific agenda items. And so unless there's anybody else that wants to address the commission on the general call to the public, I don't believe so. So we'll move on to item number two.
Mr. Chairman, item two is consideration of proposed commission orders 2, 5 through 10, 13, and 26 for the 2019-20 and 2020-21 hunting seasons, and commission order 23 for the 2019-20 and 2020-21 trapping seasons. Presenter is Amber Munich, Big Game Management Program Supervisor.
Morning, Amber.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. Earlier, I handed out a binder that has two sections in it. The first part has our Commission presentation for the Big Game. It has your Commission memo that you received earlier, and then the certification copies. The certification copies are for the fall 2019, fall 2020 for most of the species, but not all of them, and then spring 2020 and spring 2021 for javelina, bison, and bear. The second half of your binder will be item number three, which is our small game and migratory bird information. There is also a tab for all the comments that I received during this process. Most of them have been forwarded to you, so you've already seen them, and you can look through those. So this fall for me is a no tag for you. And at first I was thinking, that's not really a good thing. Nobody in my family drew tags, but it actually means that I get to go scuba diving, maybe a couple of times. My daughter's going off to Williams College in Massachusetts, so I get to visit a new state. And that is an empty nest for me, and I can do anything else I want. So as I said, I'm presenting on the 2019 and 2020 Fall Big Game Commission Orders and the 2020 and 21 Spring Commission Orders. These commission orders are drafted under our guidelines that were approved by the commission in September of 2017, and they will be used through the spring 2023 seasons. This recommendation package is for 2 years for most species. There will be no hunt recommendations presented in August. We're actually taking those commission orders that we typically present then and splitting them between the elk and pronghorn recommendation period and this fall-April recommendation period. So turkey will now be included with elk and pronghorn. You will see the 2019 fall turkey presentation today because those hunts have not yet been approved. And then bison, black bear, and javelina will be part of this package in the future. We will maintain the 3 draw cycles, though. So they're approved at different times, but the draw periods still are the same. Just as a brief overview of our hunt recommendation process, this is a multi-tiered process for setting.
Amber, just 1 second. Commissioner Davis.
Understand what the presentation is about the changes that we made, but I think it's important to note if we need to evaluate on an annual basis for certain conditions or whatever. We obviously, as a commission, can do that.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Davis, yes. Anytime, once you've approved the commission orders, if there's something that suggests an amendment is necessary, we can bring it back before you and the commission can make that amendment.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, Hunt recommendations, it's a multi-tiered process for setting the seasons, the permit levels, and the bag limits for the various species. We start with our guidelines, which are now approved for a five-year period. And again, that's something that can be adaptable to, and if there's changes desired for the guidelines, the commission can amend guidelines. We have our population surveys, our hunter harvest surveys, and then our social input that feed into the hunt recommendations. And we're moving to 2 years for hunt recommendations for most species. And that ultimately ends up in our regulations. This whole process is not just me here in the Phoenix. It is all of our wildlife managers. It's our game specialists in the regions, the wildlife program managers. And then it comes to the terrestrial program in Phoenix and ultimately presented to you here today. So we'll move into Commission Order 2, Deer. Again, this is for the 2019 and the 2020 seasons. These are the, under guidelines, these are the parameters under which we manage for both mule deer and whitetail deer. And this is our standard management unit, so the bulk of our units. We manage for an alternative structure, which is typically an older age class in units 12A and B, 13A and B, 3A, 3C, 17A, 45A, B, and C for mule deer. And you can see that we have an age structure under this alternative frame. We manage for lower hunter density, and we typically manage for higher bucks per does, which gets us to that older age class. Our standard management units have been riding within guidelines for a number of years. We did see a drop in fawn recruitment in 2018. It's been going down, and we've now dropped below guidelines. As you'll see in this recommendation, that leads to fewer permits, mainly for mule deer. Whitetail deer, again, we're on a slight downward decline there, and that's reflected in some units where we're seeing a decrease in permits. For our alternative management units for mule deer, you'll see a series of slides for each one. And if it's highlighted yellow, it means we're either above or below guidelines in those categories. And so 3A, 3C, we are slightly below guidelines for hunt success or harvest of 3-plus age bucks. This is a unit that we've been we've decreased permits to a level, and we're kind of riding that, trying to build that unit in there. We're having a lot of bucks, big bucks, come out of 3A, 3C, but they're not always in that higher age class category. And then we're slightly below on the buck-to-doe ratio. Again, that would be reflective of the decline, some declining populations across the state. 17A, we're within guidelines for all parameters. 45A, B, and C, we're slightly below on hunt success. Now, I don't think that's an accurate figure there. We had poorer response rates to our hunter questionnaire this year, and that would lead to a lower hunt success demonstrated. On the KIBAB, the only unit that we're slightly below guidelines on is in 12B for the percentage of 5-plus-year-old bucks. And we had decreased permits in here a year or two ago, and this population is moving into guidelines. On the strip, 13A is, again, slightly below on the 5-plus-year-old age books. And this one, again, is moving back into guidelines. We have been adjusting permits to achieve that goal. Opportunity changes in the recommendations. We're recommending a pretty big decrease in mule deer permits, again, mainly driven by low fawn-to-doe ratios and slightly dropping populations. We do have a slight decrease in whitetail deer permits. We're increasing youth permits, and so some of that change in total permit numbers is a conversion of permits from a general season into a youth season. Youth seasons typically have higher hunt success, and so it's not a one-to-one trade. We are at 7.97% for our youth permits, and our target is 8%. So I believe we're right there. We are looking at a decrease in the over-the-counter archery deer opportunity. We're recommending a conversion of Unit 1 from a over-the-counter hunt to a draw hunt of 125 permits. Unit 1 has had low fawn recruitment for a number of years. Well, this year, it had been increasing after the Wallow Fire. Low fawn recruitment this year, a drop in the overall population size. We've also seen that the archery hunt opportunity, I'm going to back up. For archery harvest, we manage for 20% of the harvest to go to archers in a given hunt area. Once we start to exceed that 20% of the total take, we start to take away that over-the-counter archery opportunity. Unit 1 has been above 20% for a number of years. We have not recommended moving it into a draw structure because the population has been doing well and we've been able to offer additional firearm opportunity in there. Because of the low fawn recruitment and the need to decrease permits, we are recommending that decrease in harvest come out of archery, and the best way we can do that is make it a permitted hunt where we can control take.
Amber, a quick question on that. So over the next few years, we'll monitor that. The 125 permits, I did talk to the region about this, and that was our best guess about how we could achieve those guidelines that you talked about. But over the next few years, we can always, there's a potential of tweaking that number if we see a need to increase or decrease, correct?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, yes, that is correct. Whenever we go from an over-the-counter to a draw season, we don't know exactly what hunt success is going to be, and it will be higher. And so we take an expected hunt success based on other units that may be in that type of hunt structure and apply that. As we learn what hunt success will be in Unit 1, we will adjust permits accordingly to achieve the appropriate harvest.
Thank you.
Unit 23, we're recommending closing the December timeframe for the over-the-counter archery. And Unit 6B South, we are removing the last half of January from that over-the-counter structure. Something new that we haven't done before is offer permitted December archery deer hunts. And we felt that there was some opportunity to do this in Unit 7 with an any antler deer hunt with 50 permits. And then in 11M, it's an any deer hunt, so antlerless and antlered, for 50 permits. The Unit 11M, it's got a very robust population. It's in that metro area, so we can only offer archery opportunity. And we're hoping that the any deer will put a little pressure to move deer away from closer to in town. Maybe it might have a slight impact on decreasing vehicle deer collisions or feeding situations in the area. We expect about a 30% hunt success on this hunt. That's about 15 to 18 deer, and potentially you could have half of that as doe harvest if the hunters chose to take a doe. So very little impact to the overall reproducing part of this population.
Amber, can we talk a little bit more about that? Because we have had some comments about harvesting does, and if we have an abundance of does, for instance, why don't we do something like translocate those does rather than harvesting? We've got other areas that are struggling maybe when their mule deer populations. Why wouldn't we do something like that, try to move some of those does out of there?
The department right now is following the best management practices as provided by AFWA in relation to CWD. That's chronic wasting disease. The practice is to not move cervids across state lines or within state boundaries to help minimize the expansion of chronic wasting disease. We don't currently have it in Arizona. We have had negative results for more than 20 years, and we don't want to encourage that occurring. And so that's the main driver for not translocating cervids in Arizona. I know we have done some in the past, but this is a new best management practice that many states are adopting, and we're actually hoping that our sister states, our border states, adopt the same approach.
We're pretty much surrounded by CWD, the states around us, correct?
We are to the north and to the
east.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Commissioner Davis.
I absolutely understand the context of that. But if we don't have it right now, why wouldn't we use the opportunity while we don't, while we're not testing positive, and I realize we could have it and not realize it yet, but technically we don't have it. Why wouldn't we use the opportunity to do that while we can?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Davis, the main reason is that we believe we don't have it, but we're not 100% positive. The best example I can give is with bighorn sheep. And for many, many years, we've translocated bighorn sheep across the state and even out of state without any kind of testing. And we didn't really have reason to believe that there was any issues. But with this Mycoplasma ovipneumoniae and the different pneumonias that sheep are contracting today, we've actually taken bighorn sheep from our populations and put them in other populations unaware that they carried these viruses and have actually seen the native population suffer significantly from that. The best example is when we took Kofa bighorn sheep and took them to San Andres, New Mexico, their entire native population died off because of that translocation. And so that's the main reason why we wouldn't want to move now, even though we believe that we're in a pretty good position relative to chronic wasting disease.
All right, thanks, Amber.
For the late white-tailed deer, per hunt guidelines, we offer a limited amount of December hunt opportunity, and it's about 5%. We're sitting just over 5% when you look at it at a statewide level. For the alternative white-tail hunts, we manage for more bucks per 100 does, and we manage for 30% of the total white-tailed deer harvest to occur in December. And so you see a shift of permits into those December timeframes. For Unit 12A West, the youth-only hunt, we're recommending a decrease in permits here, and it's driven by lower fawn recruitment. We've actually dropped below guidelines, which we rarely do in this unit, and our objective here is to maintain a stable to slightly growing population. So in order to maintain that trend and keep that population with a slight growth, we are backing off on the antler harvest. Previously, we had two hunts in antlerless youth hunts in 12A. We're recommending only the October 11 through 14 timeframe as antlerless only. It'll be 300 permits, and overall this is a decrease of 225 permits across these two hunts. So for 2019, this is our recommendation. We will have the bonus point only option. We will be recommending a portion of tags in units 4A, 5A, and 5B be allocated to Hopi members. We're looking at 46,840 permits with an overall decrease of 1,295. For 2020, the recommendation is pretty close to the same, but we do have a couple of rotations that are occurring, and this switches up the permits slightly. Our recommendation is to rotate the December mule deer hunt from Unit 6B into Unit 7, to rotate the youth 6A hunt into Unit 7, and to rotate the Unit 7 archery December mule deer hunt into 5A, 5B. Overall, we're looking at 46,860 permits, which is an increase of 30 from 2019. I have a recommendation when the commission's ready.
Any more questions for Amber?
Can you go back to two slides, though, because this is where when we get into the 2 years. The no change in 20 is after the change or slight increase in 20, but comes off of a number that's 1,300, almost 1,300 in 19. So that it's the real impact is we're looking at a reduction of nearly 1,300 over the next 2 years.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Davis, that is correct. We're looking at nearly 1,300 this year and adding back in 30 permits in 2020.
Right. I have a question, and I should have asked you this before. I just thought of it, but our leftover tags at the end of the year, at the end of the draw, how does that compare? How many leftover permits do we have, deer permits do we have typically? Do you know that offhand?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, I haven't looked at that number recently. We do have a high percentage of our first and second season whitetail hunts as leftover, and we're probably in the 1,000 range for that, but I don't have an exact number.
That's
for
fine.
Sure.
Ballpark's good enough. Just wondering how that might apply to this year, if that might change that.
It's kind of interesting. We've actually seen a change in how hunters choose to apply, and because they know that the odds of drawing either of those hunts is pretty much 100% because we have leftover tags, they're not using their bonus points to draw them. So we've actually seen a slight increase in those being left over, with hunters kind of playing that game. I'll put in for hard areas to expend my bonus points, but if not, I'll take my chances of picking up one of these this year.
Not a bad strategy. Thank you. Any other questions for Amber? All right. Do you have a recommendation?
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, the Department recommends the Commission vote to approve Commission Order 2, Deer, for the 2019 and 20 seasons as presented.
Commissioner Davis?
Mr. Chairman, the Hunt Recommendation Committee recommends to accept the Department's recommendation for Deer.
We have a motion. We have a second.
Second.
We have a second by Commissioner Sparks. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Thank you.
So now we're on to Commission Order 5, Turkey. This recommendation is only for the 2019 fall seasons. The rest of turkey hunts will be brought before you with elk and pronghorn in December. We manage for fall turkey based on hunt success. We try to target 15 to 20%. And it's not something that we can dial in on, whether influences turkey hunting significantly. And so you can see that by the yellow line with it jumping back and forth. However, we did see a pretty significant drop this past year. Our recommendation is no change for the turkey seasons. It's at 5,000 permits. It's actually a 25-permit increase in 5B South and a 25-permit decrease in Unit 22. No change to the youth or the archery seasons.
Questions for Amber? Go ahead with your recommendation.
The department recommends the commission vote to approve Commission Order 5, Turkey, for the 2019 fall seasons as presented.
Commissioner Davis?
Mr. Chairman, the Hunt Recommendation Committee recommends support for Commission Order 5, Turkey.
We have a second by Commissioner Sparks. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Amber?
Now we're on Commission Order 6, which is the fall and the spring javelina hunts for 2019-20 and 2020-21. Fall javelina hunts are typically offered as youth only. We're recommending 965 permits. This is an addition of a new hunt in 20B with 85 permits and an increase in Unit 10 and 18B. For these youth fall javelina seasons that can overlap youth deer hunts, we recommend offering what's called companion tags. That's part of our population management hunt structure. And I'll actually go into more of that when I get to that commission order. We are recommending 9 youth population management companion seasons for another 1,155 permits. We don't sell very many of those tags. Last year, just over 100 were sold.
Amber, could you go back to that slide? Tell us about that picture.
This picture is not my daughter.
Oh. She's grown up a lot if she's going
my, to my daughter, well, she's 18 now and thinks she's independent.
It's a great
but,
picture, by
the way. This is Aaron Butler's niece, and this was her javelina from a couple years ago.
That's a great picture. Thank you.
So for the fall javelina season, we're recommending 965 permits, which is an increase of 145. For the 2020 fall season, the only change here is going to be the shift in the season dates, as we do each year with the calendar shift. I'm now going to go into more data that will influence the spring recommendation a little bit more than it does the fall. We manage for average herd size, and we've been riding pretty much right within the guidelines for that across the state. Youth recruitment, young per 100 adults, has been riding within guidelines. We do see that the permit authorized does not meet it exceeds the demand for those tags. For general, it exceeds the demand for ham, and it exceeds the demand for archery. Now, we do try to allocate permits based on that demand, but because we exceed demand across the board, sometimes you see these permit allocations off a little bit from the true demand based on the calculations. Ham's getting a little bit more, general's getting a little bit less. This is all driven by an individual unit that may have a higher demand for ham than it does for general, or vice versa. And we target about 10% of the tags going to youth hunters for javelina, and we're sitting at 11.5% when you bring in the spring and the fall seasons. For the 2020 spring seasons, these are the season dates that we're recommending. They will also ratchet for the 2021 seasons they'll actually ratchet by 2 days because 2020 is leap year and it shifts the calendar a little bit differently. Our permit recommendation overall is 27,982, and this is an increase of 25 permits from 2019 spring seasons. Again, the 2021, that slide is wrong, the last line should say 2021, it'll only include the calendar shift, and there'll be no change from the 27,982. We are recommending continuing the 2-bag limit for javelina. And I have a recommendation when the commission's ready.
Questions from the commission? Go ahead, Amber.
The department recommends the commission vote to approve Commission Order 6, Javelina, for the 2019 and 20 fall seasons and the 2020 and 21 spring seasons as presented.
Mr. Chairman, the Hunt Guidelines and Seasons Committee makes a recommendation to approve Commission Order 6, Javelina.
Second by Commissioner Brake. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Amber.
Bighorn Sheep, Commission Order 7. Our management objective for bighorn sheep is to target harvest at 15 to 25% of the Class 3 and the Class 4 rams. And that's anything that's a 6-year-old or better. Now, looking at the horns and saying that's a 6-year-old, that's an art. Average score has been riding about 163 the last few years, 165 to 163, and the average age has been at between 7 and 8. Formatting of the regulations is going to mirror what we've done in the past, so we will be labeling desert and rocky hunts. We will be separating out a few areas that have been identified as very extreme or limited access areas, and then we highlight some notes that we try to get hunters to key in on because they've got special restrictions associated with them or information that they should be really aware of. It seems like maybe Google lost some of my slides, but I'm not sure here. We are recommending that the bonus point option be included. The general permits, we're recommending an increase of 3 permits. This is an increase in Unit 9 by a single permit, and Unit 9-10 will be stratified into 2 seasons now. The first season will be the month of October, and the second season will be the months of November and December. Typically, that hunter in there harvests within the first week of the hunt, and so that's why we were able to do this stratification. We're recommending an increase in the Superstition Wilderness Hunt. This is in 24B, and then another permit increase in 24B South. We're also recommending increases in the 31-32 Aravaipa Hunt, 39 East, and 6A-22 North. The 6A-22 North is a Rocky Mountain hunt. Decreases are recommended in 45B and 45C and the Upper Blue River Hunt area. The Upper Blue River Hunt area has been a stratified hunt. It'll be condensed into a single hunt for the month of December now. I have a recommendation when the commission's ready.
Any questions for Amber? Before we go for your recommendation, I do have a blue speaker's card request. Pete Similaro. Pete, if you'd come down, you know the drill. State your name for the record and keep your comments limited to 3 minutes. We'd appreciate it.
My name is Pete Similaro. I'm here representing the Board of Governors of the Arizona Desert Bighorn Sheep Society. Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, Director Gray, Department staff, normally I'd say members of the public, but it might be member, I'm not sure. Good morning. I believe the Commission is in receipt of a letter that the Sheep Society sent on Thursday after our Wednesday board meeting. We have met with the department, as we always do with Amber and Josh and sometimes Mr. DeVos. And I will just briefly read a couple of comments from here. In general, the Sheep Society supports both the increases and decreases in the bighorn sheep tags as proposed that are commensurate with the recent surveys and population trends for the area's game management units. We are also pleased to support an additional tag in Unit 910. As Amber stated earlier, it is good to see that that can be allowed. We do have one suggestion, and I'm going to read it off of the letter that was sent. We would suggest that a consideration be given to adding two tags and an additional stratified hunt in Unit 37A. Observations and reports from last season indicate that there were substantial numbers of Class 3 and 4 rams in this unit that could support additional tags for the hunt. But because the unit and the distribution of sheep is relatively small, the crowding during the coveted bighorn sheep hunt is a major concern. We would not recommend adding tags to the two existing units, we would not recommend adding tags to the two existing units. The best way to accomplish this would be to add an earlier stratified hunt. So that is what the Sheep Society is asking, is that tags be added and an additional stratified hunt be created to keep separation between the hunters.
Thank you for your comments.
I have a question for Peter.
Commissioner Davis.
Pete, thanks for coming. If the Hunt Recommendation Committee, we've been having a conversation about the request. If we were to determine to add a tag in each of the current two seasons, you're saying that would be problematic, or would that – I know you're recommending a third season. There's some concern, I think, about a third season start too early in the year with – temperature conditions, because it'd be in October. Your view of that, and what I guess I'm asking is, if we were to add a tag into each of the current seasons, would you be okay with that? Would the organization be okay with that?
I believe they would be. There is a concern because of the in Unit 37A with the Silver Bell and Waterman Complex. It is small, and there are some issues on access, and so you're in each other's hip pocket sometimes, just depending on where the sheep are. And this last year, perfect example, one of our most active members and a former employee of the department, Dave Conrad, had one of those tags. And some other friends of Sheep Society members in Tucson had those tags. And there was an army of Sheep Society people down there. And that's one of the reasons why that we've asked for additional tags, because of the everybody working together and being in the hunt unit, they uncovered a tremendous number of Class 3 and 4 rams, the kind of rams that any hunter would be glad to take. And so they felt this was a limited opportunity. Obviously, it wouldn't go on forever, but because of those excess mature rams, they ought to be able to hunt. You do recognize the fact that people are in close proximity, and what it really takes is coordination between the hunters. That would be the consideration that I would say would be most important.
But if we were to add a tag, we're talking about going from 2 to 3. I mean, do you think this would be a catastrophic problem? Or
no.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Any other questions for Amber? Go ahead with your recommendation.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, the Department recommends the Commission vote to approve Commission Order 7, Bighorn Sheep, for the 2019 season only, as presented.
Commissioner Davis.
Mr. Chairman, the Hunt Recommendation Committee recommends approval of Commission Order Number 7 with one change, which is to add a tag in both hunts in Unit 37.
A 37A.
37A. Sorry about that.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second to accept the department recommendation with the addition of one each additional tag in the stratified hunts in Unit 37A. And a second by Commissioner Sparks. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Amber.
Commission Order 8. This is fall and spring bison for the 2019-20 and the 2020-21 seasons. Typically, on Raymond, for the Raymond herd, we see 100% success. This is always a designated bison hunt. As you are aware, that over the last few years, we had totally eliminated that population and brought in new bison from Wind Cave National Park. And now that herd is in a position where we can start to offer some harvest in there. Our recommendation is one designated bull hunt for two permits, one designated cow hunt for two permits, and one designated yearling hunt for two permits. The designated bison will actually be separated from the main herd and put in another pasture, and then those hunters actually can go out and take one of the their designated animals. So if it's a bull hunt, then they can go and take one of the two bulls that are out there. We're not walking them up and saying, shoot that one there.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Davis.
I may have heard wrong. Is it one yearling or is it two? I thought I heard.
It's one yearling. Okay. So a single yearling hunt. So three hunts, two bull tags, two cow tags, and one yearling tag. Now, this recommendation is for 2 years, but because we don't know what that growth is on that yearling population, and if it exceeds what we're expecting, we may come back with an amendment next April to increase permits in this for these hunts. For the house rock herd, we're looking at three general cow permits with 30 permits each, cow hunts with 30 permits each, a muzzleloader cow hunt with 10 permits, and a archery cow hunt with 10 permits. For these hunts, the house rock wildlife area, the entire wildlife area, will be closed. The fall bison recommendation is 55 permits, which is a decrease of one. That decrease is our approach to eliminating the original Raymond herd and then now offering harvest based on the new population. The 2020 recommendation is the same, just with the calendar shift. For the spring seasons, we are recommending 80 permits for the house rock herd. This does include, so the house rock herd has two kind of subpopulations. One is the main herd that we've talked about for decades, and it resides on Grand Canyon National Park for a good portion of the year, comes on and off for hunting availability. We then brought in some bison from American Prairie Reserve and have been holding them in pens on house rock area, wildlife area proper, that we continue to expand how much range that they have on there. And so this spring season includes the harvest of one yearling, one designated bull down on that American Prairie portion of the population. There are no spring hunts recommended for the Raymond herd, and our total recommendation is 80 permits, which is a decrease of one or five. The spring recommendation is, again, just reflects the calendar shift. I'll have the same number of 80 permits. I have a recommendation when the commission's ready.
Question on bison. Okay, go ahead with your recommendation, please.
The department recommends the commission vote to approve Commission Order 8, Bison, for the 2019 and 20 fall seasons and the 2020 and 21 spring seasons as presented.
Mr. Davis?
Mr. Chairman, the Hunt Recommendation Committee recommends the commission vote to support Commission Order 8 as recommended.
We have a second by Commissioner Sparks. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Motion passes unanimously.
Commission Order 9, Black Bear. This is for the fall and spring 2019-20 and the 2020 and 21 seasons. Our annual hunt objectives are to stratify both fall and spring seasons. Each hunt will have a female harvest limit, and each unit will have an annual female harvest limit, which is comprised of the individual hunt numbers plus any cumulative that are cumulative, and then plus any department take. It does not include any depredation take in that annual female harvest limit. The annual limit targets a 10% or less of the female segment of the population. These are the seasons that we're recommending. They are just a calendar shift from the 2018 and 19 seasons. All these years are getting me confused. The female harvest limits, we're actually recommending a slight increase of 2, and this is in units 24A with a single increase and unit 33 a single increase. Unit 33 is also recommending an increase to the annual limit for that overall hunt, that overall unit. We do require a mandatory checkout. The 2020 fall seasons will just reflect the calendar shift and no change to these female harvest limits addressed right here. For the spring bear hunts, we have had a female harvest limit of 37, and the actual female harvest fluctuates a bit. We have been pretty steady with the number. For the spring time frame, we have both permitted hunts and over-the-counter hunts, and we've been pretty steady on the number of permitted permits that are offered each year, and then we see a pretty steady participation in the over-the-counter portion also. This is history of harvest for spring bear statewide. Our recommendation includes the 10 permits, which is no change for the general, in the same units that we've seen for the past number of years. No change to the archery permitted section. And overall, we're looking at 290 permits. For the 2021 season, it includes a calendar shift, but no change to the permit numbers or to the female harvest limits. This is just a table that shows you the annual female harvest limits with the increase in unit 33. And I have a recommendation when the commission is ready.
Questions for Amber? Go ahead with your recommendation.
The department recommends the commission vote to approve Commission Order 9, BEAR, for the 2019 and 20 fall seasons and the 2020 and 21 spring seasons as presented.
Mr. Chairman, the Hunt Recommendation Committee has reviewed this recommendation and would make a motion to approve Commission Order 9 as presented.
Second.
We have a second by Commissioner Brake. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Amber.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, before I jump into Commission Order 10, I just realized that one slide that I had at the beginning didn't transfer through, and we have had some notes attached to all of our regulations, all of our hunts, in relation to the quarter mile closure under a specific area for archery take. And we've seen that in Unit 33, in the metro units, and about 5 or 6 of the units in Region 3. This closure was to discourage hunters from getting up close to property and occupied buildings and structures. With Article 3, which has just been approved and will become effective June 1st, there is a new rule change in there that does not allow for the discharge of hybrid devices or a bolt or an arrow within a quarter mile of an occupied building or structure unless you have permission from the resident or the owner. That rule is going to replace those notes throughout all commission orders. So your packet actually has those notes still listed in there, but we are going to extract them from every commission order. So Commission Order 10, Mountain Lions, this is for the 2019-20 and the 2020 and 21 seasons. Our management objectives have been to create management zones. We have adopted 15 management zones and to establish harvest thresholds based on those management zones. The percentage of female take over a three-year average can influence whether or not we adjust that harvest threshold, as well as any change in population in our modeling efforts can all inform when it's appropriate to modify the harvest threshold numbers. And I'm going to go back through our approach for establishing these thresholds because I don't remember if Commissioner Brake actually heard this before or not, and this is new based on this last season. So we estimated the mountain lion population size at the using agent harvest and non-harvest mortality. We did that at a statewide level, and then we did it within the 15 zones that were established. We then estimated abundance for each zone and applied a 14% total harvest rate to that to determine the threshold. We were able to get population estimates in 9 of the 15 zones, and so we applied 14% to that population estimate, which gave us our harvest threshold number. For the other 6 zones, we looked at total harvest over an 11-year period, and looked at average harvest within those zones and maximum harvest within those zones. The harvest threshold was set at maximum harvest for those 6 zones. Research shows that harvest rates associated with population stability vary across mountain ranges and even between regions of a single state. And so we looked at studies that were more directed towards Arizona and our drier climates, and that's how we came up with the 14% harvest rate. The harvest thresholds are not objectives to be met. They're a maximum not to exceed so that we maintain stable mountain lion populations, sustainable mountain lion populations. When a harvest threshold is reached in a management zone, that zone will close and mountain lion hunting for the remainder of the season will stop. We do have in place a pursuit-only season that coincides with the season dates for the harvest seasons, and if a threshold is reached, hunters may continue to pursue only as long as they have a license and a valid tag in their pocket. They just cannot physically harvest a mountain lion. We are recommending continuing the mandatory checkout process. I did want to also reiterate that depredation take and department removals do not count towards the harvest threshold. And depredation take under ARS 17302 remains in effect, and it's for year long, regardless of any season closures. And this 17302 is the taking of bear mountain lion for protection of property. This is our mountain lion harvest across historically, and the female harvest is the orange line. So we pretty much have a stable take in that regards. This table shows you the 2018-19 harvest. So this is from August 24th of 2018 through yesterday. The first column shows you the harvest thresholds by zones. Then we have the zones that have closed to date, the total number of mountain lions that were taken within those zones, the percentage of harvest that was taken using hounds. Typically, we see between 60 and 70% of our statewide harvest is in relation to hound hunting. And then the breakdown of males and females. These are the zones that we have had in place. Our recommendation, what we're going to do is change the zone designation from a number to a letter so that we don't get confused when we're talking about zone 10, and zone 10 may have included unit 10, that kind of thing. And we're skipping the letter O so it's not mistaken for a zero. These are the harvest thresholds that we're recommending for 2019-20 and 2020-21. It's no change from the current thresholds. We know that there's been a lot of interest in how the zones have closed and reaching those thresholds and how it's affected our ability, our hunting opportunity. We did not expect zones to close, but we did not expect to have a winter like we had this year. When we look back at our historic data, the maximum harvest years are almost always years that we have had higher levels of snow, and it increases total take. We're recommending that we maintain the harvest thresholds and the current zones for a couple of years so we get more data points to see if they are set appropriately. One thing that this year will do is it gives us more age data that will inform those populations better also.
Amber, quick question for you, and we talked about this on the phone the other day, but our total take for the year was, did you say 307? And that's a fairly typical year as far as overall take of mountain lions for a year?
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, we're actually at 314 lions statewide, which rides right within our normal annual harvest, and we're talking about, 7 months, 8 months of the year already hitting that total.
Okay.
The harvest thresholds themselves bring us to about, I think it's 356 mountain lions statewide if we were to hit the threshold in every single unit.
Okay.
Or every single zone. Our recommendation is to maintain the summer closure, so the seasons would be August 23rd through May 31st, and then in 2020-21 it would be August 21st through May 31st, maintaining the 15 management zones, maintaining the thresholds as they currently are, maintaining any mountain lion except spotted kittens and females with spotted kittens, an annual bag limit of one, and the mandatory checkout. Something pretty neat about our Bear and Lion program is April Howard has been working with our IT section on developing some tools that will aid in the check-in process and our management of the data so that hunters know where we sit in relation to those thresholds. And you'll see some of that on our website going into the next season. I have a recommendation when the commission's ready.
Any questions for Amber? I do have a speaker's card. We'll take a few minutes to do that. Pete Simlero. Good morning again.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Once again, Pete Simlero for the Arizona Desert Bighorn Sheep Society. Overall, the Sheep Society is very pleased with the effort made by the department. We recognize that right now this is kind of a fluctuating effort. We understand that fully and, again, are very supportive of the process. We are supporting everything we see. One thing that we would like to offer up for consideration is what we consider better reporting, just a way to make the information more available to those who are still hunting in the fields as to which zones are open. I'm going to read briefly the two paragraphs. Based on feedback we've received from houndsmen and other Sheep Society people, the ADBS would like to recommend a minor change to the manner in which mountain lion zone closures are reported. Rather than just listing a zone as open or closed, we would like to recommend that consideration be given to additionally reporting the current harvest level and the total harvest threshold for each zone. An example would be mountain lion zone number 4 has a current harvest of 4 lions out of a threshold of 19 and is open at this time. This would allow both hunters and outfitters to better plan ahead. If I could turn the page, I'll read the rest of it. And for their clients' hunts and lessen the risk of having to cancel hunts because of recent unexpected zone closures. The Sheep Society is concerned that an early zone closures experienced this year may have resulted in very little harvest occurring in some of the units containing bighorn sheep. Once the harvest statistics for 2018-19 season are compiled, we would like an opportunity to review with the department the harvest breakdown by unit or a portion of the unit within each zone to determine if take across the zone is diversified or if an adjustment in the zone composition is warranted. We are particularly concerned that some of the zones containing bighorn sheep populations may have been closed prematurely before any respective harvest occurred within the area holding bighorn sheep. Adjusting the composition of a zone may be necessary in the future to better ensure the harvest within a zone is more uniformly distributed before it's closed. Again, these are just reporting concerns and the continued effort that Amber mentioned to look at the zones and look at how it's managed. It's nothing more than that.
Thanks for your comments. Any other questions for Amber?
Mr. Chairman, so based on what Amber was saying about the new system that'll go live with the new season, that kind of takes care of a part of what was requested. The other part you'll be doing anyhow as you gain the data, correct? Well, I mean, I'm assuming both those things will be taken care of, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Davis, yes. The new tools that are being developed will provide that data on our website that hunters can go to see where that unit sits. And then part of our review process on this and analyzing the data will always be to look at the zones and the thresholds within them. At some point, I anticipate the zones will morph into something that remains in place for a long period of time. It won't be really flexible, but the thresholds will be looked at with each hunt recommendation cycle to determine where that population sits and where the female take sits and whether or not that threshold is still appropriate.
Mr. Chairman, do you see potentially in the future as you accumulate the data, even though I'm thinking in my mind, if a zone could be close to being closed, having the ability to leave open a portion, like in critical sheep territory, where we might leave a piece of it open to meet a management objective, do you see us being able to do that?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Davis, we have the ability to draft predation management plans that can focus take either department take or administrative take in an area, or if you establish seasons that can address that also, they can be put into the commission order. So the answer is yes, there are mechanisms in place for that, and yes, the commission would have the ability to amend Commission Order 10 to adopt hunting seasons that can achieve that same objective if necessary.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions for Amber? Let me make a comment, if I could, on this, and we had some good discussion on this as well. I too share some concerns. We're kind of going into new territory here with some of our zones and our thresholds and our female harvest and all that, and I've got some concerns also, coupled with an exceptionally good year for snow, and perhaps our take was not going to be typical what it normally is, and so I do have some concerns there, and I definitely want to look at the data as we continue to move forward. I share with a lot of the same things that Mr. Simolero talked about and some of our concerns there, but I think that going off of 1 year is probably, we're probably a little premature to be looking at making any changes right now. So I will be watching that closely as we move into these next few years. So if there's no other comments, Mr. Chair, I'm chairman. You want to be the chairman? Commissioner Davis.
Mr. Chairman, the Hunt Recommendation Committee recommends approval of Commission Order 10, Mountain Lion.
Second.
It was second by Commissioner Brake. Is there any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you.
Commission Order 26, Population Management Hunts. I was going to take a moment just to go through population management hunts on how they actually work. I was hoping that Commissioner Guggenauer was here to hear this because it's always something that you need to hear multiple times before you can truly grasp this population structure. But we have two types of population management hunts. We have companion tags that link to other species, and they're mainly used to increase youth hunt opportunity, recruitment, and retention. And then we have our standard population management seasons. So when a regular hunt season doesn't meet our management needs and it conflicts with other wildlife or other uses of the land, and land use can occur, the department and the commission have the ability to establish population management hunts. They are directed to achieve additional harvest when traditional harvest strategies don't meet those objectives. They enhance the department's ability to meet population and habitat management objectives, and they allow us to respond more timely. Commission Order 26 is typically approved for the standard hunts. It's typically approved with the elk and pronghorn recommendation cycle. And the commission designates a range of species, a broad season date, which is typically the calendar year, a broad open area, usually a game management unit. The legal wildlife is designated elk or designated deer. And then the method of take is designated in the commission order. And then the maximum amount of tags that could be offered for that hunt. When a population management hunt is found necessary, and it's usually concerns raised by a community or a landowner, and sometimes they're identified by our wildlife manager specifically. There is a form that a wildlife manager completes that gives all the background about the issue that is driving this hunt, and it targets a specific time frame, so usually a week or two. Sometimes we stagger hunts so that you have three hunts, but they're 2 weeks apart, and you keep that pressure on in a unit. They designate a smaller area within that game management unit, and they designate a lower number of permits. Part of the intent is to focus those hunters into the problem area and to keep enough pressure in there to discourage the animals from remaining in that location. So it's not all about harvest. It's even more about that pressure to push the animals away. This is directed under R12-4-115. And it gives the director the authority to approve and initiate a population management hunt once the commission approves this commission order. Hunters are selected through a supplemental hunter pool, and it runs like a little mini draw. So we get all these names in there, and then they do a random sort and pick the next person in line.
Amber, is that draw done each time a population management hunt is required?
Mr. Chairman, yes, it is.
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Brake.
Do I understand I can go to Ty and ask him to have a hunt in my backyard? That's a joke.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Brake, but in essence, if you had a situation down there where you had deer on your ag fields and you needed them pushed off, we could initiate a hunt that focused on your field or your areas, maybe a little broader than that, to harvest some and to cause that disturbance.
Thank you. That's a nice way of saying no.
And we did have.
I knew that before I asked the question.
This year we had one in up in your.
We've had two.
Neck of the woods, two.
We've had two. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what we're recommending for the youth companion tags is 1,155 tags. I've kind of already gone through this. This does include adding a second companion hunt to the Unit 33 youth deer hunts. Everything else is the same from previous years. The increase in permits is just in relation to the changes in youth permits that are being recommended under Commission Order 2. So that's why you see a 300 permit increase. Population management seasons, the standard seasons. Again, I typically bring this back to you in December with elk and pronghorn. Unit 43A is one that has not been in that population management structure, and we're seeing increasing deer in ag fields and haven't been able to address those issues with our standard hunts. And so this recommendation is just to add the May 1st through December 31st time frame for Unit 43A, 25 permits in the archery and general season, to get us through the end of this calendar year, and then 43A will be part of the primary recommendation for the rest of Commission Order 26 in December.
Mr. Commissioner.
Commissioner Brake.
I do have a serious question, in all honesty. Do I understand, and I'm sure everybody else probably knows this besides myself, but on these designated population hunts, as I'm trying to explain, can you reduce the area that the hunt is involved in? I give you an example. I have some friends in farm and ranching that have gone in for those, and the hunters have gotten the permission to go, but they go, 25 miles away from where the problem is, and it doesn't solve anything. Are we able to get it in a smaller area to do that?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Brake, yes. That's typically what we do apply. Sometimes it's more challenging than others based on the configuration of the land and the ability to provide boundaries that a hunter could follow. But yes, good examples our elk in St. John's this past year, it was a very limited area that went around St. John's itself and focused right down on where those elk were in those fields, and we didn't want them to be.
Thank you.
And another good thing about these population management seasons is, my example again is going to be elk, is in the Springerville area, we've had the Coon Canyon, the Antelope Mountain, and Flat Top Mountain hunt areas in place for a number of years. Those started out as population management hunts and trying to address elk right around Springerville and Eager. And as those populations maintained themselves or grew, rather than continuing population management hunts, we established limited opportunity hunts. The limited opportunity just means that animals aren't there all the time. Your hunt success is going to be lower. It's not a typical
general
hunt. And so when we can, we convert this into a hunter draw opportunity and use our standard management approaches to address them.
Amber, I have a question for you. So the next step in a process like that, if that's still not effective, I know that there's been some areas that we've actually even had over-the-counter elk permits, and I can't remember, somewhere up near the interstate by Joseph City, Holbrook, up in that area, there was a situation where we ended up just having over-the-counter, and it was a kind of a general, not a general tag, but a firearms tag. How does that happen? How does that next step happen?
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, going over the counter, it's a challenge with different species based on their proximity to their primary herd, I guess. It's really just part of our hunt recommendation process and evaluating where that population is, what are the challenges it's presenting, and what are the advantages and disadvantages of going over the counter. An over-the-counter hunt in the Springerville area, we're really in the core of elk habitat, and it would not be beneficial to our elk population to establish an over-the-counter season there. Maybe as you move further north, it might be advantageous. What we see with where we have the over-the-counter elk hunts are areas where it's not anywhere near traditional elk habitat, and we don't want to see those populations expanding. We'd really like to see them eliminated. We've demonstrated that that's not possible to do that elimination, but we have maintained that really low density in those non-desirable areas.
And something similar with the Kaibab and the Strip as well, what we've done up there with the elk. That would be another tool.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I have a recommendation when the commission's ready.
Any other questions for Amber? Go ahead with the recommendation.
The department recommends the commission vote to approve Commission Order 26, Population Management Hunts for the 2019 seasons. I'm going to modify this recommendation. The 2019 43A archery and general population management season, and approve the 2019 and 20 companion tag population management seasons as presented.
Mr. Chairman, the Hunt Recommendation Committee supports approval of Commission Order 26 as recommended by the department.
Second. We have a second by Commissioner Brake. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Amber.
Commission Order 13 is predatory and fur-bearing mammals, and Commission Order 23 is trapping. We have no recommended changes for the 2019-20 seasons or the 2020 and 21.
Questions? Good with your recommendation.
The department recommends the commission approve Commission Order 13 and 23 for the 2019-20 and 2020-21 seasons as presented.
Mr. Davis?
Mr. Chairman, the Hunt Recommendation Committee supports approval of Commission Order 13 and Commission Order 23 as presented by the department.
Second. You have a second by Commissioner Sparks. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Motion passes unanimously.
I had a really cool scuba diving video that I was going to plug in here, but I couldn't get it to work.
Next time.
Have fun.
Thank you for that, Amber. Good work.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Director.
Mr. Chairman, item three is consideration of proposed commission orders 11, 12, 14 through 18 for the 2019, 2020, and 2020, 2021 hunting seasons, 19 through 22, and 24 for the 2019 and 2020 hunting season. Presenter is Jonathan O'Dell, small game biologist.
Morning, Jonathan.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. I apologize, Director, for that tongue twister that goes through there. Yes, I am your small game evangelist for the day. We're looking at the small game orders for a two-year period, the 2019 and 20 season, as well as 20 and 21. Migratory birds themselves will be coming back to you every year, and simply for the 19 and 20 hunt recommendation season. So for Commission Orders 11, 12, and 14 through 18, just to sum up the recommendation for this year, they're set for a two-year period. Commission Orders 11, tree squirrel, 12, cottontail, 16, quail, 17, chucker partridge, and 18, the blue or dusky grouse, are recommended according to the hunt guidelines that we've established early on. And there are no changes to those for anything other than calendar shift. And so there are two changes we have to those orders. One is Commission Order 14, other birds and mammals, and Commission Order 15, pheasant. And those are the ones I'll highlight for you today. Commission Order 14, other birds and mammals, is a unique order simply because it covers a large suite of species. They're not even within the same order, like quail, which has three. This has a variety of species, and these are what is known typically as the hunted non-game species. More specifically, the change to this order has to do with the American crow. Crows versus ravens is a unique situation here in the state. This image you see in front of you is actually an image Audubon uses in the distinguishing characteristics between crows and ravens, and as you can see here, it takes a very keen eye to be able to tell the difference between the two. Here in Arizona, the American crow occupies a large swath just simply across the Mogollon Rim and a few connected areas there in heavy distribution. Compared to ravens, which the common raven occupies the entire state as far as a range, and the Chihuahuan raven only occupies the southeastern corner of the state. Because of this, we've had some instances of incidental or illegal take of ravens simply through misidentification or not knowing that they are so similar. And the Chihuahuan raven is a species of concern for us.
simply because it at one point was being considered as a candidate for listing on ESA. So this recommended change for crows is their most abundant areas where they're found in Game Management Unit 1, 2C, 3A, 3B, 3C, 4A, 4B, 5A, 5B, 6A, 6B, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11M, 17A, 17B, 18A, 18B, 19B, and 27, restricting that hunting area to those areas versus the previously statewide open area that we had. No other changes are recommended on this. I did make a technical error in the memo that I'd like to mention. I originally said this was actually out of hunt guidelines, and when I looked at it, actually reducing the hunting area wouldn't be outside of the hunt guidelines itself. So, but just to make you aware of that, there are no other changes are recommended for the commission order at all. Looking at pheasants, the other change we're recommending into the small game species this year, just to give you a little bit of background, historically, pheasants were originally brought into this country into California in 1857. They were brought into Arizona in the early 1880s, at least the first known ones. And these original pheasants were Chinese ringnecks. Now, the department started to really take a focus of these ringnecks and spreading them across the state simply because they were having success all across the country. Everywhere they seemed to go, they were spreading like wildfire. However, for us at that point, hunting was just opportunistic at best. Arizona wasn't well-suited for the Chinese ringneck and really only took in a few areas. In the 1970s, there was a renewed effort by the department to introduce pheasants. However, this time they were the white-winged Afghan pheasants, who look very similar. We figured those pheasants that come from Afghanistan, which are very similar in habitat condition to Arizona, might be better suited. Turns out they weren't either, but we did have a large aviary at Robbins Butte where this was taking place. So we have attempted at least twice to cover pheasants in Arizona. More recently, because of all those efforts, statewide falconry only was actually the first season established under the commission for pheasants in 1975, and then an archery-only season in 1980. We actually didn't have a general season until 1998, and this was actually focused strictly in Unit 40B, the Yuma farming area. This was the only area the Chinese ringnecks took off. And stayed in the long term. We had a little bit on the Gila Rivers and things for quite some time, but never in any great abundance. But, of course, the farming areas provided a lot of cover, a lot of habitat. We started out with 100 permits at that time, peaking in about 2008 with 160, and thus decreasing last year till about 90 permits with three hunts. These are the pheasant surveys we've been conducting in 40B over that time frame. As you can see, that first initial decline after we'd started was simply more of a habitat issue and weather conditions, not anything more, which is the bounce back in the late 2000s. We got to an all-time high. Things were good, or at least so we thought, and then have been in steady and steep decline since. The more recent declines are actually due to food safety issues that are pressed upon the farmers down there. And this has resulted in clean farming standards that removes a lot of the habitat that pheasants would use along the canals and drainages, as well as, you know, any time a food safety inspector walks out, he would much rather see a leveled, complete field with no ancillary brush or things that would taint what goes in there. Also, we've had quite a bit of urban development down in the Yuma and Somerton areas that have impacted the pheasants as well. Just to give you an idea, a lot of the pheasant hunting over this time frame in the more recent past, it's about 50% residents. Definitely the locals take advantage of this, as well as folks from other areas, so you can kind of see that. We are exceeding the demand for sure down in this area, even though we've only had about around 100 permits as of late. The application rate is somewhere around 600-700 folks. So, and that if those draw statistics are right, half of them are definitely coming from the Yuma area. They have an interest in that. So, what we were recommending is pretty different than where we have been in the past. We're looking at asking to change the pheasant season from a permitted season to a non-permitted general limited weapon shotgun shooting shot only season. This would be much like you see with quail or anything else. You wouldn't be required to have a permit. Simply your hunting license would work for this. We're also looking at opening the area from the restriction of just the limited area of the valley in 40B that's west of the East Main Canal to all of 40B, which would now include the Mesa as well. The recommendation is to have the season September 1st to the 15th, which coincides typically with our early dove season. This would allow law enforcement officers to be out there and also alleviate a lot of conflicts that we currently have with pheasant seasons and lettuce production in the Yuma Valley. We do want to look at this after the 2 years and evaluate to see what has happened, simply because this has never been tried before. But this recommendation is out of guidelines, but it is consistent with the Commission's philosophy on small game, attempting to group things where folks can hunt several species in the same place at one time. So other than that, there are no recommended changes to pheasant. And I have a recommendation for small game commission orders.
I have a question. Questions, Commissioner Davis?
Just to educate myself, I saw you. We had a reduction in the number of permits. You were talking, you know, we reached a high of whatever it was, 160 or whatever.
Yep.
We're down to 90. Yes, so we reduced previously permits, but now we're gonna. And I'm not saying I'm opposed to it, but we're gonna have a general season, no permit. How does that work if we've reduced permits previously? I mean, what are you concerned at all about the impacts?
We were attempting to reduce the permits because in a permitted framework, it's based on the available birds that we believe that are out there. What hadn't occurred to us before back during the hunt guidelines, which was this wasn't brought up, one of the things that's pretty evident, conditions on the other side of the Colorado River and the border fence in Mexico are spectacular. There are driven pheasant hunts in San Luis that you can pay for where you will pretty much be guaranteed to see 250 pheasants fly over your head in a single spot. And so our farmers, you know, the farmers, it's not that the farmers do not want to help us. They've done, you know, tremendous things. Our problem has been not having year-round habitat. It's more seasonal. So the summertime now, a lot of the things that we've been working on are great for pheasants, and we're definitely seeing reproduction within the hens. Down there, and typically we would only allow the youth only to take hens. We're shifting to a rooster only, so that way the hens would remain in place. If we have hens available, the roosters will come over from the fence. I actually got to see this personally when I was attempting to chase pheasants, and I shot them, and they flew over the fence to where I couldn't go. This is just an attempt to, you know, we're looking at an option to be able to say, okay, we still have some. Instead of trying to fight the decline in the clean farming standards and all that, you know, we are abutted up against a very large pheasant preserve, for lack of a better term, that will feed into our state and hopefully still provide that opportunity in the future. So,
okay.
During the hunting season, we generally do tend to have quite a bit more pheasants that move in based on habitat that's available at that time. So,
thank you.
Great question. Anybody else? All right, Jonathan, go ahead with your recommendation.
The department recommends the commission vote to approve Commission Order 11, tree squirrel 12, cottontail 14, other birds and mammals 15, pheasant 16, quail 17, chucker and 18, dusky grouse as presented for the 2019-20 and 2020-2021 seasons.
Mr. Davis.
Mr. Chairman, the Hunt Recommendation Committee supports the department's recommendation on Hunt Order 11, 12, 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18 as presented.
Second
by Commissioner Brake. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Moving on to the commission orders covering migratory birds 19 through 22 and 24. We begin here with dove. Our migratory bird stamp sales, as this shows, we've been relatively stable in the mid 50,000s over the course of time. The 2018 data is preliminary, as the graphic I showed you the last time I was here for this. 2017 was also down, but as you can see, it readjusts. We simply don't have everything keyed from 2018 to know a final number. So we expect that to come up just slightly and probably level us out again.
Well, Jen one of your recent reports, we saw a spike in the, I think, noticed a spike in the number of permits. Do I remember that right on that update you sent out? Yeah. I read this stuff. But I'm pretty sure it was a pretty substantial, percentage-wise, I mean, but a pretty substantial spike.
For Dove as well, when you look at the birds per harvest, which is the yellow line, Arizona actually enjoys one of the highest, if not the highest, number of birds per hunter harvested in the country. We have an incredibly high density due to the bird conservation region we exist in, the Sonoran Mojave. It's not seen anywhere else. Fairly phenomenal. And our hunters get to enjoy, on average, about 3 days, a piece out in the field, and that's remained stable over time as well. The white-winged dove call counts. This is a little illustrative here. Beginning in 2013, we had the license simplification here in the agency, and one of the issues that it has caused that we've definitely been working on is these HIP stamp sales and the reporting to Fish and Wildlife Service for them to do their survey. We've struggled with it, I think, mightily year over year, and so that decline you see since 2013 may actually not be realized. I would actually waver a guess to say it actually isn't real at all, simply because when you compare it to the call counts, white-winged doves are becoming more and more available to us. We're in a great growth phase of white-winged doves. Historically, if you go back in Arizona's history, white-winged dove bag limits actually used to be at 25 per day, in addition to your morning doves. So there's a potential here for a lot of growth, and we're starting to see that now, and mostly due to a lot of the small seed crops that are coming back in the summers here in Arizona, which has been really good. Just to give you a little indication, again, that decline is still there since 2013 on the right side of the graph, but what I would probably pay more attention to is the difference between the harvest here in the Western Management Unit. Arizona is the heavy hitter when it comes to white-winged dove harvest, more so than California. Arizona is responsible for all of the other Western Management Unit states' ability to hunt white wings because we're the only ones who are doing the monitoring. Texas is the only one doing it in the Central Management Unit. And so we are the two responsible states for this particular bird. Fish and Wildlife Service simply doesn't have the resources available and entrust us with that. But certainly things are going very well for us. And one thing I'd also like to add is what I don't have a graphic for is the percentage of white wings in our harvest is increasing as well, showing that again, that trend in call counts is being reflected. And so white wings are becoming a greater part of our annual harvest. And that annual fluctuation of up and down that we generally see, that's when we talk about, is it a white wing year, is it not? And that's whether or not they've migrated before the season opens or they've hung around a little bit. And usually that's due to heavy rainstorms right around that opening date time frame. So, again, we're recommending the early gentle dove season, September 1st to the 15th, statewide with a 15-bird bag, morning doves and white wings with no more than 10 white wings in that bag in aggregate, 45 in possession, which is the three-time daily limit. The late general season, we're looking at November 22nd. This is a slight shift from previous years. We had shifted forward to the Friday after Thanksgiving. This will actually, because Thanksgiving falls on a weird time and we're looking at exploring some new ideas, this is back to the Friday before Thanksgiving. I know a lot of folks appreciated the ability to dove hunt on Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Heard some comments on that, so we've shifted back to that opener again here for the second season. This is a 15 morning dove only, mostly because there really aren't that many white wings at all left in the state of Arizona by this time. And so those that are here are generally a more resident bird, a highland bird that doesn't migrate the same way the colonials do. Juniors only season, we're looking at Robins Butte on September 7th and 8th, reserving that area for them to host a great event that's been going on for many, many decades. And falconer-only season between September 16th and November 1st. With falconers on all the migratory birds as I move forward into the other as well, where falconry is available as a take. Falconry is only allowed to take three migratory birds regardless of species at a time with a falcon in a given day as part of the aggregate, so it's not an additive effect there. Of course, the collared dove season, September 1st through August 31st, allowing for a year-round season as well as an unlimited bag. These are definitely a point of interest for most hunters. It doesn't rise yet to the occasion of meeting priority lists for our webless research funds from the Fish and Wildlife Service, but is getting very close because I know we all have questions and interests. We're just trying to finish dialing in mourning doves and white wings before we move on to figuring out what we can learn about these collared doves. So I have a recommendation for Commissioner Order 19 when you're ready, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions for Jonathan? Good with your recommendation.
The department recommends commission vote to approve Commission Order 19 doves in accordance with the final federal frameworks as presented.
Mr. Chairman, the Hunt Recommendation Committee recommends approval of Commission Order 19 as presented by the department.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Brake. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Jonathan.
Mr. Chair, moving on to Commission Order 20, Bandtail Pigeon. Just to refresh your memory, there are two populations of bandtail pigeons. There's the coastal population and the interior population. Arizona is more concerned with the interior population that occurs here in the Four Corner region. Again, as I talked about earlier, having issues with hip bleeds into several areas of all the migratory birds, bandtails in particular, simply because there's such a lower number of hunters for these. It's hard to get more accurate estimates, and so things can get very wavery. And we've been trying to address that internally with some other measures. We are currently working with Colorado, New Mexico, and Utah, as well as the Fish and Wildlife Service, to adjust our imprecise harvest estimate, doing work with collaring and banning and inserting PTT tags into bandtail pigeons, along with antenna readers in dense areas to determine a little bit more information about these birds' longevity and their returning to specific sites year after year. We are recommending a continuation of the voluntary online registration at this point, which would help improve our harvest estimate. In the future, we would like to make this mandatory, but we're not recommending that for this year currently. The season dates for this, we are only allowed 14 days, which we've moved into October, October 5th through the 13th this particular year. If I'd mentioned a few years earlier, this was an issue with a few of our hunters who remembered hunting them in October. As I went back in season history, because it wasn't tied to a week of the year like a lot of the other ones through our hunt guidelines process and everything, as I went back through decades and decades of hunting regulations, I realized that just due to calendar shift, bandtail pigeon had slowly shifted over 30 years back into early September with nothing to stop it. And so we readjusted this a couple years ago to address those concerns and now have tied it to a week of the year, so we know when theoretically it should start consistently every year, even without calendar shift. So I have a recommendation if the chairman is ready.
Any questions for Jonathan? Good with your recommendation.
Mr. Chairman, the department recommends the commission vote to approve Commission Order 20, Bandtail Pigeon, in accordance with the final federal frameworks as presented.
Mr. Chairman, the Hunt Recommendation Committee recommends the commission support Commission Order Number 20 as presented by the department.
So. Motion and a second by Commissioner Sparks. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Motion passes unanimously.
Thank
moving
you, Mr.
on to
Chairman.
21.
Moving on to Commission Order 21, waterfowl, coots, and moorhens. This image here is actually of the holding pond at Cibola. If you don't believe we have waterfowl, I definitely would disagree with that statement. People don't think they see ducks and geese. Believe me, we have them. The North American waterfowl breeding population over the course of the last few years has been at all-time highs. Drought is no friend to anyone, in particular the prairie habitat of southern Canada and the northern states, which suffered a little bit of a setback in the past few years, and thus the population dropped a little bit, but still an incredible number of ducks out there. Arizona's harvest, again, 2013, just to point that out, it looks bleaker than it really is. We've seen some of these dips and declines, and duck hunters also as well tend to be a much lower number of hunters within our state, greater than bantails but far less than doves. So it is difficult to get some information off those. But a lot of what this slide really illustrates is that we are more of a duck state than a goose state. In terms of our harvest, it's usually orders of magnitude more ducks than geese that we harvest based on what we see here. Don't be scared by the psychedelic beach balls in front of you. This is one of the metrics I use to track things that are going on. Looking back at our 2016-17 season, this is very representative of most of our seasons. Mallard generally is our number one harvested duck. The large dark green from the 12 o'clock to 3 o'clock position. And the other lime green is our green-winged teal. Those are generally our number one and number two ducks harvested every year, along with a menagerie of others as we've kind of gone along. The 2017-18 season was a little unique. Most hunters, duck hunters in the state described it as being awful, simply because the North Country did not get cold at all. We didn't have freezes. Mallards are a pretty hardy duck and don't move unless it's frozen. They can withstand a whole lot of cold temperatures. And we saw an explosion of widgeon that year. Widgeon actually became the number one duck in the state of Arizona for the first time ever since we've been recording information. Now, why this is important, yeah, it could just be an off year, but we operate our seasons based on the mallard model of North America, like many of the other flyways. California, the other big duck hunting state in Pacific Flyway, their number one duck isn't mallards. It's actually pintails. And so when you start to look at this, you know, there was like, oh, it's a one-year fluke, kind of threw us off. But I can definitely tell you I do not have the final numbers from the 18-19 season yet, but after returning from the wing bee just a couple of months ago, I can tell you something is different. Something is definitely changing within the migratory patterns of birds because widgeon are increasing in Arizona for an unknown reason, greater than which they're increasing in abundance available everywhere else. So we'll continue to track that. Not that it's a bad thing or something we need to be concerned about, but there are definitely changes afoot within the migratory birds coming to Arizona. So again, speaking about the mallard model package that we see, these are the established criteria which we have to work with based on populations of mallards as our primary driver. Again, mallards are doing very well. And so the liberal package at 107 days with a 7-bird bag limit is where we're currently being recommended to. For mallards, certain ducks have specific management plans while others do not. Mallard is currently our number one throughout most of the flyway, and so it drives the season. Again, it's a 7 duck per day. However, our one caveat is no more than 2 hens or Mexican-like ducks. The Mexican-like duck is a banner that Arizona carries alone in the Pacific Flyway. Currently, it is not recognized as a species by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service because the American Ornithologist Society does not recognize it. It used to be recognized and actually was the first management plan in the Pacific Flyway. There's been a recommendation on the table of the American Ornithologist Society since 2013 to re-recognize Mexican duck, and hopefully one of these years the board will take it under advisement and bring it back. But for now, we continue to staunchly defend the Mexican duck within the flyway, as it is harvested in other states, but we are definitely the banner carrier here. Pintail, the current model, pintail suffered a little bit of a decline, and so it's actually recommended a decrease to 1 per day. It's the only change this year within the waterfowl or the duck management plans, SCOP, the current model specifies a moderate season of 86 days and three ducks per day. Canvasback remains at 107 with two, and redhead at 107 with two as well. Arizona is broken into two zones, the mountain zone and desert zone. The mountain zone allows us to take advantage of early season ducks that are here or that are coming through, and we can get out of the heat and hunt them early on before the major migration moves in to the desert zone much later in the season, where we can push season dates further and more ducks arrive. So for the 2019-2020 waterfowl season, again, we're recommending a liberal package. For the mountain zone, the juniors will follow or will precede the regular season by a week. And in between the juniors and falconry, we have falconry for 4 days, general waterfowl for 101 days from October 4th through January 12th, SCOP starting a little bit later at October 19th through the January 12th. The desert zone, we begin with general waterfowl on October 18th, going to January 27th, followed by SCOP starting a little bit later on November 2nd, falconry after the general season ends for 4 days, and then juniors only season at the very end in February, having the last season available for them on the weekend. So again, to summarize the recommendation, overall daily duck bag limit is 7, mallard with 7 with no more than 2 hen or female-like ducks, pintail reduction to 1, redhead at 2, scop at 3 with an 86-day season, canvasback at 2. One other duck that is of concern for us is the black-bellied whistling duck. We're the only state currently where black-bellied whistlers breed. They're slowly but surely moving in. They've been here for quite a while, but we believe a self-imposed reduction to 1 duck is appropriate. All other ducks are at 7. Possession, of course, is 3 times the daily bag with 21 ducks as a possession. Geese, the bag limits for white geese, which include Ross, Snows, and Blue Geese, are 20 per day within Arizona. We're also recommending the dark geese of Canada, Cackling, Brant, and White Front at 4 per day. The reason why Cackling is highlighted there is U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's 1013 list was approved a little while ago. And requires the additional language of having Cackling in there, simply now that because they're recognized as separate from the Canada geese complex. Within the Pacific Flyway, this is significant simply because when you look at the recognized Canada complex geese, we actually recognize 7 different geese that are known in the Canadian the Canada family. So adding Cackling out was a major milestone and move forward for us. The possession, again, is 3 times a daily bag, consistent with the other migratory birds. So for a total of 60 white geese and 12 dark geese in possession. Coots and moorhens, the bag limit on these is 25 singly or in the aggregate. Possession, 3 times a daily bag, or 75 singly or in the aggregate for both coots and moorhens. I have a recommendation if the chair is ready to hear it.
Questions?
I have a question.
Question by Commissioner Davis.
On duck, you just went through a fairly complex series of recommendations. I know a lot of it's driven, obviously, by our required work with our federal partners and the Migratory Bird Act. One thing I hear from hunters about, because talk about people wanting to go duck hunting, there's almost a fear of going duck hunting because it's confusing. And quite frankly, I mean, obviously you can identify ducks in your sleep. Others can't. Are we seeing a reduction in people that are duck hunting? Are we seeing an increase? Or is it stable? Because I hear this more and more all the time.
Commissioner Davis, one of the things that we recognized very early on back in the early days of the R3 process is that, you know, the waterfowl regs are the most complicated there are in the country. And they're consistently complicated amongst every single state. Right now, we're what's been confounding to us is that we're at the highest levels of duck numbers we've ever seen. Most other species, you know, they talk about the good old days, and for us, that's now. You know, if there ever was a signal to be out there, now was the time to be out there. However, we're at the lowest duck hunters that we've seen historically. And you know, a lot of issues for that. Some of the human dimensions work we've gone through on this issue. One thing stands evidently clear. It takes a duck hunter to make a duck hunter. However, when we're looking at those kind of things, it's readily apparent that duck hunters are doing that. You know, they are taking friends and family in much larger numbers than we're seeing in some of the other species-specific style hunters of hey, come out with me, we need to go. But, of course, the guys who are duck hunting now aren't the way it traditionally used to be. There aren't really duck hunters now who, you know, purchase everything, including the federal stamp, state stamp, license, equipment and all that, and just go for one weekend. These are the guys who are grinders, the guys who are putting in 45, 50, 60 days a year during the season. This is what they live for. And so we're not seeing the casual duck hunter who, we went out this weekend and that was kind of it. But we definitely do know that it takes a duck hunter to make a duck hunter, simply because of those identification issues and all that. And duck hunters, you know, you have to be pretty savvy to be able to ID in low light conditions at very high speeds when it's raining, hailing, tornadoing, and hurricaning all at the same time, which is the best time to duck hunt, you know, and telling the difference between sex and everything on those ducks. So.
Right.
It is difficult. We have posed the question of splash limits in the past, where we would look at because some of the species are of concern based on their population numbers. We felt that if we just said, you know, take five ducks, it doesn't matter what species it is. A lot of hunters would target specific ducks, like in California in the rice fields, where they are limited to only so many. Even at a one bag limit, pintail is still the number one duck harvested in Arizona. Or in California. So if we allowed it to, you know, five ducks as an overall, regardless of species, there's a lot of hunters who would be taking a lot of pintails very quickly. And so we feel that would reduce populations in some areas. But for new hunters, yeah, that has been posed as a splash limit. Just shoot five ducks and it doesn't matter what they are.
So that, I guess my question is, okay, and if you look at your list, I mean, there's a couple that are the ones, like the pinto.
Mm-hmm.
But... it seems to me, is there a way then to say there's a, I like that term, there's a splash limit of five except on this one species and see what happens. Actually see, now I realize this involves federal, you know, the feds as well. But it just seems to me that this gets so complicated and we're losing a big opportunity at exactly the time you said would be the time to be using it as a way to get people out in the field. But I get the, and I hear this around the campfire and hunt camp. They're like, I don't duck hunt because I'm scared to go because I don't want to get cited for, you know, screwing up. So it seems to me I would love to see us look at a splash limit at least with, you know, an exception or whatever it is that meets targets, because I do think it's a lost opportunity.
Absolutely, Commissioner. It's been heavily discussed, and it continues to come up simply as ways we can, as we review and seek out more human dimensions data across the flyways and at that level specific to us.
Because if you think about your model, when you say it takes a duck hunter to make a duck hunter, if there's a reduction in duck hunters, then there's going to be fewer people making duck hunters, right? I mean, that... So that to me, that model over the long term is actually a bad model. So how do we look at changing the dynamic?
Absolutely, Commissioner. It's definitely it weighs on me regularly at the meetings as we, you know, argue for hours over what bag limits should be and on certain species with population levels and all that, and then working jointly with other flyways and partners in that situation. So.
I guess I would ask, Mr. Chairman, if you know, giving you the freedom to really examine this, I would love to see personally a change. If you wouldn't, I mean, I know, you know, take the time to, I know you think about these things, but actually I guess the commission saying we'd love for you to really take a hard look at this, because I agree. I think it's a huge lost opportunity while we have those populations.
Absolutely, Commissioner Davis.
I think we can probably do that in just commission direction. Mm-hmm. Just direct the staff to do that. Fair enough. Commissioner Brake.
I have an argument about it. Duck hunter takes a duck hunter to make an. I would say that it takes a pond of water to make a duck hunter. And for the last 3 years, we haven't had any ponds of water. And that has been, I mean, I just see, I grew up in this state. We puddle hot ducks all alive. The last 3 years, in my 20,000 acres, there was no water, and I have had no duck hunters. So this year I've got some water, and I don't know if that's a startling comment, but I would, I'm thinking that maybe perhaps some of your hunter depletion or lack of hunters is, it has a lot to do with the drought we've been in for the last 3 years.
Well, Commissioner Brick, I would probably adjust that to 30 years. In the last 30 years, Arizona has lost some of its finest duck hunting spots, right, such as Picacho Reservoir and Painted Rock Reservoir. We've lost a lot of water in 30 years that used to hold a lot of birds and a lot of hunters as well. And so the more recent stuff definitely has had an impact, but there is a long-term impact that has occurred to us with regard to waterfowl hunting. But we are, again, as the earlier image I showed you of Cibola, one of the significant facts is that is the crown jewel of our state in terms of waterfowl. Approximately one-third of all ducks harvested in Arizona come from that refuge. 20% actually come from Region 5 through a whole nother means. Cibola is definitely geared more towards the decoy placement, you know, the traditional idea of duck hunting. Region 5 is built on tank jumping, and certainly a lot of ducks come from that area. So folks are being successful a lot of times. I think it just takes a little bit of travel, and again, we are seeing some strange things happening within the migratory patterns of some of the birds, and so we're not really sure what the cause of that or why that is, but it is evident to duck hunters across the state, you know, what is going on. But we definitely, at least there are data that's you know, at a national level, you know, duck hunter, it takes a duck hunter to make one, and definitely duck hunters are doing that. I know personally I've brought at least three department employees into the fold within the past 10 years, you know, teaching them, because it takes more than 1 year to definitely make a hunter as well. So it's, you just got to almost select a person a year and say, okay, let me teach you how to duck hunt, you know, commit to coming with me and all that. But it is a slow process, but it's still, looking at it, one of the other confounding things is the habitat is expanding where ducks are breeding. And so is it the fact that, you know, this spike in ducks is because we have, you know, our lowest levels ever, or is it because we're experiencing really great habitat up in the North Country? There's a lot of things at play there that make us consider these things. But,
well, my comment was not to make you feel like you weren't not doing a good job. Nature has a lot to do with the amount of hunters that are out there. And I mean, I'm just looking at it from my little area down there, and I used to duck hunt on my own place. I haven't bought a stamp the last couple of years because I have no water around, and I ignore the people around me. So don't be too hard on yourself on some of these things, because there's, you know, if you could make it rain, you could do a lot better than working for the Game and Fish Department, okay?
All right. I think we're ready to hunt some snipe.
Okay.
We got to do an Order 21. Did we already do a recommendation?
Still have the recommendation, okay, Mr. Chairman. The department recommends the commission vote to approve Commission Order 21 waterfowl in accordance with the final federal frameworks as presented.
Mr. Chairman, Hunt Recommendation Committee recommends supporting Commission Order 21 as presented by the department.
Second.
Move a second by Commissioner Brake. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Now, snipe.
Moving on to Commissioner Davis's favorite commission order, 22, the snipe. Interestingly enough, on snipe, before we move into some of the data on that, snipe is the classic example of losing a hunt for a generation and what can happen. We lost snipe hunting very early in the 1900s because of low numbers, so we were not able to hunt them. When populations bounce back, we reopen the season, and there's not very many people to hunt them. And this is a nationwide This is what we're seeing everywhere with regard to snipe. That's why there's always the joke about the snipe hunt and going out, simply because for a time you couldn't find one. Our average, this again tied to our HIP data from Fish and Wildlife Service, we were experiencing a decline long before the 2013 changeover. But again, it just gets very difficult where it bounces between years where we do not find someone who snipe hunts and someone who does. The 2019-20 snipe season recommendation is to run concurrent with the general season of waterfowl of October 4th through January 12th in the mountain zone, the desert zone October 18th through January 26th. The bag limit here is 8 per day and a possession limit of 24. I have a recommendation if Chairman's
questions.
Just one simple question. Go back to the dates of the seasons. No. Why wouldn't the just have the same dates for both? I mean, what's the magic behind that?
This Commissioner Davis, this is actually so they coincide with the duck season.
Okay.
Generally, duck hunters tend to be the ones who harvest because they're occupying shallow grassy wetlands next to riverbanks and things.
Makes sense. Thank you.
Any other questions? Go ahead with your recommendation, Jonathan.
The department recommends commission vote to approve Commission Order 22 SNIPE in accordance with the final federal frameworks as presented.
Mr. Chairman, the Hunt Recommendation Committee recommends approval of Commission Order 22 as presented by the department.
Second. Second by Commissioner Sparks. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Motion passes unanimously.
Moving on to Commission Order 24, Sandhill Crane. I believe I'm a long line of predecessors who were self-imposed craniacs. Poetically, these birds are referred to as the gray wind, and that's where this photo, I think, clearly illustrates that. Sandhill cranes can be very confusing, particularly in Arizona, simply because we're talking about several different things at one time. The first point is that there are two races of sandhill cranes. One is called a greater, one is a lesser, and as their name implies, one is big, one is small. And when we talk small, we're talking relative size. A lesser sandhill crane is still about 3 feet tall with up to a 5-foot wingspan, where a greater is about 4 feet tall with a 7-foot wingspan, weighing in on the heavy end of about 13 pounds on the greaters and 7 to 9 pounds on the lessers. As it relates to Arizona, we have a bunch of different populations that bleed into this, and this is where it can get confusing. This population here is the range map for the mid-continent population, which is comprised mostly of lessers. As you can see, it just ekes over into southeastern Arizona as part of its migration. This population is approaching about 500,000 birds currently. And yes, some of the birds who fly from Siberia do end up in Arizona. So long, long ways away. The second population we talk about is the Rocky Mountain population. This is vastly more important to our crane seasons overall. The Rocky Mountain population is just a little bit over 21,000 birds currently. This is their distribution. They're known as the Rocky Mountains simply because that's where they breed. They are mostly graders. And as they go through, you can see that pinch point in the middle Rio Grande Valley. This is a very important place where all the birds actually pass through and then fan back out again across southeastern Arizona, New Mexico, and Mexico. We have a third population known as the Lower Colorado River Valley population. This population numbers in just a little over 2,500 birds. They are all graders as well. They winter along our Lower Colorado River Valley. Areas with Cibola and Imperial National Wildlife Refuge, and then a little bit up along the lower Gila River with some just outside of Phoenix and Buckeye. So the Sandhill Crane permit allocation, as I said, is based off the Rocky Mountain population itself. So these numbers are what's most critical for us to be able to have a hunt. The recruitment was estimated at slightly below the long-term average. However, the fall survey three-year average is just over 21,000, as I said. Our objective on this bird, which is very unique, is the fact that we have a floor and a ceiling. We try to not have more than 21,000 simply because they cause more and more problems the more there are. biologist who preceded us would have never dreamed we could have got to 17,000 when they set that number at their population levels before. And then, you know, I doubt they would ever have imagined us going to a ceiling where we didn't. We may have had too many. Arizona always takes this population very seriously. We were the first state in the Pacific Flyway to hunt them beginning in 1981. This has become the crown jewel of the Pacific Flyway, showing that we can manage long-lived birds with hunting as a part of it, as a part of their management in the long term. Our allocation this year is 118 cranes, which is down from 157 last year. The allocation is based on a formula within the RMP management plan, of which Arizona participates with annually. So to look at our allocation over time versus our actual harvest of RMP birds, this is why we run sandhill crane check stations every 3 years, so we get accurate measurements to be able to determine which is a greater, which is a lesser. And in the intervening 2 years, we use that information to estimate the harvest of these as well. But as you can see, we've done a very good job of not exceeding our allocation, simply because that's birds we'd be taking away from other states, since all of us get a little piece of this. However, when you look at our total harvest, there's a great thing that's happening here. Because we get mid-continent birds, which are mostly lessers, that allows us to hunt and harvest more birds than any other state within the Pacific Flyway. We have to do a little bit of hunting math here. As you can see, these are on two different scales, but our wintering population has been riding overall in about the 30,000 range, or a little higher. We've pushed harvest up in the past few years. Last year, it looked like only about 15% of our harvest was considered RMP birds versus mid-continent lessers, which has allowed us to really push this harvest upwards and provide more opportunities to more hunters. One of the things we're recommending this year is opening Unit 29 for the first time ever. This will tie the loop up with our border and the distribution of wintering cranes in New Mexico. A lot of this area in Unit 29 is a pass-through spot between the Wilcox Playa and those areas over towards Lordsburg. But there are a few farms in there, and our regional staff worked diligently with them to be able to provide access on these should we open it and provide us the information we needed to push this through. So we are recommending 29 open for the first time ever. One of the other things we're recommending is an adjustment to the Wilcox Playa closure area. Regional staff, as well as myself and our landowner relations program, have been working quite closely with Coronado Dairy and Farms in the Kansas settlement area. They are now the largest landowner within the Kansas settlement area at 151 pivots. Early on, the closure area was set up running down Kansas Settlement Road to Kimsey. Kimsey was selected simply because it was the only road at the time, I think, that went all the way across and made a nice, easy boundary, so it was a little bit more arbitrary. And those fields that you see inside the line of Kansas Settlement and Kimsey Road were owned by other farmers, and at the time really weren't as productive during the time the cranes were here, and they weren't producing the same crops at the time that cranes were interested in. However, now that the dairy is fired up and running at full capacity this year, in addition to it being a wet year, they were able to get in early and put in a lot of grain crops. And they also found out that the cranes really liked that too and started eating them out of house and home when our phones started ringing off the hook. So Ted Haas, who is their hunt manager, a local from the Wilcox area, has been great at meeting with us. We've had several discussions, and our wildlife managers came up with a new boundary there at Robb's Road, working over to the power lines, essentially opening up all their fields so that they can manage the hunters and the crops a little bit more effectively, keeping the cranes off them. Everything's been working. The Robb's Road, incidentally, we took a look at this. There was early concerns about how far back we would push that boundary. Currently, Robb's Road is well over a mile from the current lake, as well as where the location of the new Crane Lake will be implemented with our agreements with SunZia. So the cranes won't have any issues of it being too close and really pressuring that roost site. So in the general sandhill crane hunt summary, we have five hunts in the multi-area of 30A, 30B, 31, and 32. Again, five hunts stratified within Unit 28, and, of course, the two new hunts in Unit 29. The two hunts in 29 required a mandatory harvested check that the wildlife managers, we've been working through. Those two hunts occur on weekends, which makes it a little easier for our wildlife managers to chase folks down instead of doing a full-blown check station. They'll be notified and given the contact information, so that way when they harvest a bird, they can be checked out. That'll give us, until we know the full racial composition of the birds that we can that we're harvesting in there, we won't be able to adjust really any permits until we feel comfortable looking at our allocation and everything else out here. But it is an addition of 10 new tags. We, of course, also have our archery-only sandhill crane, which starts before the general seasons, early in the multi-area with 10 hunters. The youth-only sandhill crane hunt follows everything when we're at our maximum number of birds, with 25 in the big multi-area. And every recommendation, the commission's ready to hear it.
Questions for Jonathan? Go ahead.
The department recommends the commission vote to approve Commission Order 24, Sandhill Crane, in accordance with the final federal frameworks as presented.
Mr. Chairman, the Hunt Recommendation Committee recommends approval of Commission Order 24 as presented by the department.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Brake. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Tremendous amount of
information. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Short time. Thank you. Excellent. All right, Mr. Director.
Mr. Chairman, that brings us to item four, which is future agenda items and action items. So I'll be acting deputy director. We didn't have any future action or future agenda items. We did have three action items. One was related to the Lockgate petitions yesterday from Commissioner Guggenheim. That was promote via signage campaign how to report vandalism and illegal activity. So we'll be working on that. Two was the Navajo agreement. We're just going to revisit that internally and look at some of the things that were discussed, and whether we bring it back to you next month will depend on that. And then three was one was just brought up, and that was on waterfowl, and that was to consider changes to limits to simplify waterfowl regulations in relation to hunter recruitment.
Sir, miss any? Sounds good.
That's all we got.
All right, that's all we have, so we will need a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you, Mr. Director.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Director.
Missed it by 4 minutes.
Going back to the hotel?
I am.
Drop me off.
Yes, sir.